funded by the European Union. He acted in the face of relentless investor attack on Italy's government bonds and crumbling support in parliament, almost certainly ending a political career in which he achieved the feat of becoming the nation's longest-serving premier. Spectrum Today was produced by Askia Mohammed, engineering by David Kelly. I'm Askia Mohammed. The Raucous Caucus starts now. Thank you for listening.
WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Okay, children, calm down, calm down, calm down, calm down. Talking to my colleagues, of course. I am Terry D. Kester. This is the Raucous Caucus. Keep your hands off my stuff.
Herman Cain here. Herman Cain here. I hear that all the time. People say, keep your hands off my stuff.
My colleagues, whoever these guys...
Is that what you call the women his stuff?
Yeah. Whoever these guys are, they're out of control. So hopefully they'll gain some control and maybe even some sagacity tonight. I'm here with...
Garland Nixon.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
And Mark Levine.
Good to see you, gentlemen. Hey, this is the Raucous Caucus. As we jump into the fray, gentlemen, I got a great announcement to make. I don't know if you've got time to see my last email. We have, on the 22nd, Greg Palast booked live at Ben's Next Door.
Terrific.
The 22nd of November at Ben's Next Door.
Ben's Next Door. That's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Right next to Ben's Chili Bowl.
Yeah.
1211 U Street. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl.
Yeah, with Greg Palast. And his new book is Vulture's Picnic. You want to get this book. You really do. Keep your hands off my stuff, Garland. Doggone, you got to watch him.
He's reading the book. Don't read it on your own time.
Yeah, read it on your own time. We're trying to do a show
here, just trying to feel the cover, man. I'm trying to get knowledge through osmosis here.
Yeah. That sounds like Herman Cain.
Yeah, that's right.
Is he related to Herman?
Keep your hands off my stuff.
No, Herman Cain is related apparently to the Koch brothers.
Oh, yeah, that's
according
no
to Herman Cain, he's a brother from another mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Trust me, they don't see Herman Cain as their brother from another mother.
Well, he's got what, 10 million and they've got 25 billion each.
Seriously, guys, I don't want to, break the mood here or anything, but seriously, I want to just read a statement here which I know you're going to like. And then we're going to get right into our topic.
Well, let's tell me what the topic is.
This leads into the topic
because
here.
It's about Occupy D.C.
Just hang on.
I want to let people know the topic.
Sit down. That's right. Stay cool. I believe there will ultimately be a clash between the oppressed and those doing the oppressing. I believe there will be a clash between those who want freedom, justice, and equality for everyone and those who want to continue the system of exploitation. I believe there will be that kind of clash. I don't think it will be based on the color of the skin. Malcolm X. Ladies and gentlemen, the clash is here.
Well, it definitely is here, and it's interesting. As I've spent a lot of the weekend with the Occupy DC movement, and they've been clashing with the police, who I should have to say, they're better than other police forces around the country. But in this case, in this weekend, it certainly took a march on the police station to get them to do the right thing.
Apparently so, and we have today we're talking about the DC police and Occupy D.C., et cetera, and the Occupy groups, and we're talking about, the conflict between them at this point, and, having been in many protests myself, I'm sorry to say, Mark, no matter what you're going to do, the police eventually and always are going to side with the establishment. And they're going to take any means they can as they make that decision to go that way.
And keep in mind something from a guy who, for those who don't know, I'm a retired police officer. I retired at the rank of major.
And we don't hold it against
you. You the man.
I was the man. I was the man.
I'm scooting away from this guy.
But at any rate, here's the thing about it that a lot of people don't think about when it comes to police, the police departments. The type of people who become police officers generally tend to be people who are authoritarian-minded, tend to be rightward-leaning, nothing like me.
I'm just going to say, is this your confession, darling?
No, I didn't.
I mean, you really should tell this to your
therapist. I kind of stood out. Well, the fact that I was the vice president of the board for the ACLU for the state of Maryland, at the same time I was a police officer, that didn't necessarily...
So you're confused.
That didn't necessarily go over very well amongst my peers, let me tell you that much.
Did that mean you got harassed in the police locker rooms?
No, I got shot at.
The ACLU guy, you know.
I got shot at occasionally, but not harassed.
Just shot at.
Not harassed.
Not harassed. Well, that's good.
Is that your point? Is that it?
I don't really have a point.
Listen, it is a very special show because we've got the victims.
We do.
The victims of the hit and run. As many people know, a silver Lexus hit two people, actually four people.
Two separate attacks,
hit and runs.
At the convention center. And what was the organization that they were protesting against? It's the American...
The Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers.
It's the Americans for Prosperity.
Well, according to the police report, if we have the victims, then the driver must be on the line.
Yeah. According to the police report, the victims may have... We have to be careful because we don't want the victim's blood to soil the silver Lexus.
Right.
Yeah. Because, that could really damage
Well, think about it.
What the police are claiming at this point, and I'm sure you saw this in the Washington Post from our good police chief, Lanier, that the movement, the Occupy DC movement, has grown increasingly confrontational and violent.
Yeah, that's violent. I mean, to get run
to get
over
blood
by a car,
on the Lexus.
Think about this: the guy could have stepped out of the car and slipped on the blood or the entrails of one of the people that he ran over and bumped his head.
That's right. God. But before we joke about it too much, let's bring Heidi Sipple on the air to discuss this with us. Good afternoon. No, it's not good afternoon. Good evening.
Good
Heidi.
Evening.
Hi, Heidi.
Good evening. Hi. Hi, everybody.
We're certainly glad that you're able to say hi to us tonight.
Yeah. Yes, Heidi suffered a concussion, but she's doing pretty good now, right,
well,
Heidi?
Other than some bumps and bruises and some sore, I still do consider myself the victim.
That's the big question. How are Brandy and Landon doing as well? I just want to make sure you guys are healing. How are they doing?
Yeah, everybody's healing. You know, Landon had some soreness and things, and Brandy was more panicked about the baby, but everybody's healing well, and we're starting to feel much better as the day passed.
And just to remind our listeners, in case you don't know, Brandy is pregnant.
Landon is 13 years old.
Yeah, and Landon is 13
and
years old.
And according to the police, a pregnant woman and a 13-year-old boy apparently jumped on this innocent Lexus that was trying merely to mow down some protesters.
Well, Heidi, go ahead, if you would, just give us, your point of view, what you were there for and what happened and how the incident happened.
Sure. Myself and my son and wife were at the intersection of 7th in New York, and we had been there since a little after 7 o'clock after marching from McPherson Square. We had set up a line kind of catty corner facing the convention center so that we could see the people inside could see us and vice versa. We didn't need to physically block traffic because the police were very kind to set up blockades behind us to keep the traffic from coming in behind us and from moving around the convention center area. So we had set up there and formed this line across the road. We were there for about 3 hours when a car came down the street towards us. He was on the correct side of the road, at the top of the street, but as he approached the intersection, he came across the intersection onto the wrong side of the road, stopped in the middle of the intersection about 5 feet from myself and my family. He sat there for just a split second, not long enough for us to even really ascertain what he was trying to do, whether he was trying to wait for us to move out of the way or whether he needed to go left or forward through the light or whether he was going to turn around like many of the cars had before him. Then he just put his hands up in the air, seemingly in frustration, and then just gunned it. Just put his foot on the pedal and slammed right into myself and my son. Luckily, my wife was able to get to the side of the car far enough away that she was just grazed by the mirror. My son and I, though, were, because of the speed of the car, unable to get out of the way fast enough, and my son ended up doubled over kind of on the hood, and I had my hands on the hood trying to push off of it and run backwards. I realized quickly that if I didn't get out of the way of this car, he was very happily going to run us over. So he just, you know, I just shoved my son off to the right and dove to the left myself. The car hit my legs, and I tumbled, hitting my head, and briefly lost consciousness. Landon, luckily, I shoved him hard enough to get him out of the way, but, you know, he still was kind of sore and took a little tumble himself.
And the driver actually stopped, and you actually, did you make eye contact with him? I mean, did he, was he looking right at you guys when he gunned it?
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, right there, you know, looked right at us. I mean, he was, you know, 5 feet away. He looked directly at us, and he just gunned it.
Well, what Heidi Sippel didn't know at the time, but we have witnesses who are going to come on air and talk about in a minute, is that this was the second incident that the driver had had that night. We'll get back to
the same driver
in a minute. The exact same driver in the exact same car, although the police weren't aware of the first incident because they, at least initially, refused to interview the witnesses. But,
okay,
but
so
we'll get to that.
Yeah, you've been hit, Heidi. And are you lying on the pavement at this time, or are you on the sidewalk? I mean, you know, where did you fall?
Yeah, I was on the pavement. I wouldn't be able to tell you in relation to the sidewalk how far I was because I went down hard and then I stayed down. I was kind of dazed for a little bit. The other protesters called for an ambulance. Somebody actually had to dial 911 to try and get them to direct an ambulance there. I don't know the police on the scene, whether they weren't calling for them or what was going on there, but you know, they were calling for assistance. Some of the medical people that have kind of been helping around McPherson Square came over and were taking care of me. I checked on, you know, my wife and son, and they were okay. The ambulance, you know, takes me to the hospital at this point. And then I start to think about, okay, I was just hit by a car. All right, physically, how am I feeling? And then they just, if you've ever been in a trauma, it's like surreal. They're just very invasive, very quickly. There's no names exchanged, and they are cutting off your clothes and moving you through this process very quickly to try and figure out, you know, what kind of life-threatening injuries you might have. So I'm laying there kind of, you know, trying to process all of that. They wheel me, you know, just a few minutes after coming in, they wheel me to CT and x-rays. They want to do a make sure I don't have any internal bleeding and that there's no bleeding in my brain. And as I'm being wheeled there, I hear an officer talking to the nurse saying, I need to talk to her. And I'm thinking, oh, good, I'm going to give my statement now. You know, so I'm going to let her know as soon as I come out of here, I do want to talk to her. I want to tell her what happened. You know, this is going to be really important. And she says, we have to wait till after x-ray. And the female officer, I can see out of the corner of my eye, says, no, it'll just take a second. She walks up to the end of my gurney and drops two tickets, two citations on the end of my bed and says, I'm excited for walking against the don't walk sign and for obstructing traffic.
So the nurse tells the cop, wait till after the CT scan, and the cop says, it'll just take just a minute. I need to cite her.
Very important. Yeah. Getting me those papers was...
And how much were the citations for?
But Heidi, there were police there that saw this happen. Is that correct? Were there police in the area that would have seen this?
I mean, unless they went temporarily blind, they were right there and they had been there for hours. So, they would... I can't imagine what they could have been doing as this car was driving up that they wouldn't have seen any of it occur.
And they blocked off the roadways, actually, while you were in the intersection.
Yeah, they were back there. They had done all of our physical work for us. I mean, I've seen all those people questioning whether we needed to jump in front of, we were jumping on hoods of cars, that one of the officers says that we were drunk diving, whether this is some kind of term to denote, I don't know, a random act of car jumping or not,
Well, Heidi, I have to ask you, were you drunk that night? I need to ask you.
No, I certainly wasn't drunk, and my pregnant wife better not have been, and my 13-year-old son would have found himself in a whole bunch of trouble if that were the case.
And this has got to be, Heidi, this has got to be all very terrifying. Now, when you're on the gurney, do you know where Brandy and Landon are? And what's
happened to them? Brandy was actually taken to another hospital, so I did know that she was going to get an ultrasound. The medic crew who brought us in was just phenomenal. They were radioing back and forth trying to get us information and share information. So kudos to them because they did keep us informed. But Landon was actually out in the waiting room and was speaking with this officer who left me the citations. And he says to the officer, you know, as a 13-year-old boy, he says, I'm really worried about my mom back there. Is everything okay? And she kind of coldly tells him, I can't tell you any of that. There's HIPAA laws, and, you know, you have to wait. You can go back for your citation, you know.
Oh, my God.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you know if the name on the citation, if that was the same officer, if it was the female officer that walked in, was that the person who actually, whose name was on the citation for having cited you?
Yes, and she was the officer at the scene who spoke with me as they were wheeling me in. So,
I've heard from other witnesses. The name of the officer is Officer Lee. That's no secret.
The question is, was the officer there? Did the officer witness what happened? I mean, for instance, if I write you a ticket for speeding, I have to be able to say that I saw you speeding, or I have to have a witness that will testify that they saw you speed.
Well, the police.
I guess I couldn't tell you for sure. Yeah. I don't know what her location was at the time of the accident, but I had never seen her. All of the people who had blocked the traffic for us prior to the incident were all males. Most of them were on motorcycles, and then there were police cars, and maybe she was in one of those. I couldn't say, but I didn't see her.
I actually spoke to a witness just yesterday by the name of Todd Waters, who said that he saw the same officer, Officer Lee, and the same name, same description, talking with another officer saying, what can we charge these people with? And they were talking about, can we charge them with breaking a crosswalk? You know, what can we charge them? And they went to him and asked him if he had seen the crosswalk light, what it was, and he said he saw the incident, but he didn't see the crosswalk light, whether it was walk or don't walk or whatever. And he said, but I'd like to tell you about what happened. And she walked off and wouldn't take his witness statement because all she cared about, apparently, in asking him was whether the light was green or not.
And
issuing my
Yes, go ahead, please.
And I would also say that I had that similar experience with her. I said that she left these citations on the end of my gurney. When she did that, I'm processing that, and my initial response was, are you investigating him? I'd like to give a statement because I'm thinking she must not know, what's going on here, or she wouldn't be issuing me this citation. So I said, I'd like to give my statement, and she didn't even respond to me. She just walked away, and that is the last that I saw of Officer Lee.
And let me tell you this. This is critical in this incident, and if you didn't hear the beginning of the show, I retired as a law enforcement official. I was a major. I was in Maryland. I was the assistant commander of field operations.
Make sure you salute, Terry.
Why is Terry giving me the finger?
That's how he salutes police officers.
That's what I thought. But at any rate, and I ran our academy. I wrote policies on these kind of things. Any policy that was written would come before me. I teach at a community college. I teach police administration. I teach police operations. I'm very familiar with this, these types of incidents and what's going on. And I tell you what's critical here. This is what is very critical in this incident. I guarantee you that the D.C. Police Department somewhere has a written policy as to what they are supposed to do when there is a traffic incident.
They're supposed to interview all witnesses.
Right.
I talked to a D.C. lawyer who handles this kind of thing.
So I guarantee there is a written policy. When I was on a police department that got sued, and with the ACLU, we sued many police departments. And this is because this is what needs to happen. Whoever's handling this needs to go to the D.C. Police Department through a FOIA request or whatever and say, we want a copy of the policy, of your policy, of what your policy says you must do in the in this type of an instance. Because what would really hurt the police department, any argument they would have, if they are violating their own policy.
Well,
and I'm going to guarantee you right now that from my experience, that they have violated their own policies, and if you get your hands on that policy, their name is mud.
They clearly did. Now, Heidi, I was actually with you. You did a press conference, I think it was the night after, on Saturday night, where you tried to give your statement to the police at that time, and they told you no then, right?
That's right. After the incident the next day, even still sore, I knew that, one, we were visiting from out of town, so I needed to get this wrapped up as quickly as I could to get my son back for school. So we went the very next day, took the train and went to McPherson Square to try and see if we could gather some witnesses and if anybody's statement was taken. After doing that, we spoke to a couple of officers that were standing there on the street, and they directed us to give our statements at any precinct, is what they told us. Any precinct you can give it to. The closest one was District 3. So they gave us directions there, and we proceeded to there. I got a copy of the police report from them. Actually, they were very kind and gave me two copies, but told me that they would not take my statement and kind of laughed at me like I was silly to even be suggesting that they would need another statement. And then directed me to the Office of Police Investigations or Complaints, I'm sorry, of Police Complaints if I had trouble with the report. So after doing that, then, yes, we decided that we would need to collect some information from the chief himself, and that's when we heard that the police were actually going to hold the press conference, which was shocking to us because we had no answers yet.
Right.
So I'm standing there, you know, I've been hit by this car, I'm, you know, the victim, and I'm looking for answers, and suddenly I hear that there's this press conference. So we decided to go down and see if we couldn't get some answers
at
that time.
But you said, Heidi, you had a copy of the police report. What did the report say?
Yes. It basically said that from his point of view that there was a green light and there was an opening.
From the driver's point of view.
He was just trying to go through there. Obviously, he doesn't mention the fact that he was on the wrong side of the road
and that
in
he
the
stopped.
Middle of the intersection, and that he made the decision to, you know,
or that he hit somebody else a few minutes earlier.
Or more importantly, that there was an incident where a person ran over some other people, and the police department went and got a statement from the person who ran him over, but didn't get a statement from the people who was
statements from the witnesses.
Right, right. So I'm actually there on Saturday night. I attended that press conference. Heidi tried very carefully, very, very, very kindly. Actually, some of the people in Occupy DC movement were a little harsher, but Heidi was very polite. She went up. She said she wanted to give her statement. They would not take her statement. I think they told her to go to a different district office. In any case, the assistant chief of police comes out. They say he's got very little time. Here it is, Saturday night. I didn't see any fires or typhoons. I don't know what
he was
rushing
to do. Oh, there was a fire and typhoon, all right. Yeah.
He was only going to answer two questions.
Storm.
I had managed to ask him one of the questions, which was he aware there was another incident with the same driver that happened just a few minutes earlier? And he said no. And we said, well, the police officer said no. He was unaware of that other incident.
This is Saturday
night. Yeah. It's 24 hours later. This is the chief of police. He's unaware of it.
So he's a lying.
No, I don't think he was aware.
They didn't do an investigation.
They didn't investigate.
How would he know
exactly.
anything?
The other thing.
Wait, you can't go hitting people a block away and the cops don't know about it.
Well, later it turns out there was actually a police report taken there, but the police chief didn't know about it. The other thing, he was asked if he'd seen videos of the event, and he said no. And then we were asked, well, will he take these witness statements? And he turned around and walked into the building. And that's when Occupy DC went out Monday and marched to the police station and said, you got to take these witness statements. There was a standoff for an hour. I was there, too. The police were just mum. They said nothing while we went up and said, hey, you know, you've got these policies. You got to take these witness statements. And finally, after an hour standoff, when Occupy DC made clear they weren't going to leave until the police followed their own policies, the police backed down, did take Heidi's witness statement, and that's what happened.
Now we're waiting to see what happens. We've got to, you know, I want to get to our witnesses that were there as well in just a moment. But, Heidi, yep. I mean, this has got to be traumatic as all get out. And, I mean, what is your gut feeling, I mean, about being part of Occupy D.C., I mean, taking the trouble to come here to the nation's capital to take the action that you're taking and then to be, you know, basically abused by the police force of the city? I mean, what is your gut reaction to all of this?
Well, I'm really glad I was there, I because, I mean, this, I guess, is the point. I mean, we can't have things like this going on throughout our country, and they do on a daily basis. You know, D.C. Metro so far has been very receptive, but the moment that they make the decision to not be, it's going to be a totally different scene out there, and it's very disturbing to me. And, you know, I'm not some radical. I don't live in the park. I'd like to think if I had the time, I would and could, but I'm middle class. I have a family. I have a home that I own. I have a car and bills and a job. And, you know, it affects every single aspect of everyone in this country. And so I'm glad I was there. I think people should wake up. One thing I would just quickly like to say is that to the officer, you're in a unique position. You teach at the school and the academy and things. how many hours do these officers actually get on legal matters? I mean, are they, do you get training, you know, that like a lawyer would, where you know the insides and outsides of the law? I just don't think that that's the case. And we have officers out there that are being judge and jury, you know,
always.
Well, and happy to answer that question. See, what happens is this: police departments write policies because they know that attorneys, the police officers aren't attorneys, so they give them very clear parameters. If this happens, the policy says you shall do that. That's why I say it's important, because I'm guaranteeing you, when this incident happened, there are policies that say exactly what those police officers should have done, and it's not what they did, and that's what is damning to the department. And I think that's the real firestorm. That's what they're running from. They're hoping that no one will say, let me take a look at those. Holy moly.
You're supposed to interview all witnesses.
Can you show us where you did any of these things? Violated your own policy.
Yeah, we want to hear from some of the witnesses.
Yeah, we're going to have to take a break in just a few minutes. So, Sam, don't go away. Heidi, you can stay with us for a bit, I guess.
I want to get Sam on the line. I know he's got to go. He's very active with the movement in Occupy DC, and I don't want to take too much of his
time.
All
right. Well, Sam, okay, you got it. You only got a few minutes, Sam?
Yeah, I'm here with Michael. We both were there.
You're both there. Thank you.
On Friday, and we can give our testimony as to what happened.
Sam, please tell us what you saw.
Well, I somehow was in the right place at the right time, and I saw both collisions happen. It appeared very meditated. The guy slowed down before each one and then accelerated into the people.
You saw both?
Yes, he saw both. You saw Georgia being hit too, right? The first woman that was hit?
Yeah.
And how far away are these two incidents?
Just right around the corner from each other.
And the cops didn't see this. Go ahead.
Well, actually, after the first one, a cop car did a U-turn and pursued the driver down the street. So, and we have his car number, so there is evidence that they did know about it. And they did file a police report for that one too, but they didn't put the driver's name on it.
Because the first one was considered a hit and run. See, by a silver card, they couldn't tell it was a Lexus, because poor Georgia is lying on the street practically unconscious. She just saw a silver car. So, Sam, you saw, tell us what happened the first time, because Heidi's described the second time very clearly. What would you see the first time?
Right. So, I basically saw it right as she was getting hit, but it looked like he had slowed down and then he just accelerated right into her. She was on his hood for a few moments and then she fell off and hit her head pretty hard.
He kept on moving.
Pretty serious head trauma since then. She's saying she can't see straight. She can only hear out of one ear. Her memory is
suffered
a lot.
She's the most seriously hit, Georgia. That's why she's not on the show.
Speaking very slowly and softly.
The driver kept on going even after he hit Georgia.
Oh yeah, he sped around the corner, obviously looking to get away. I guess when he saw the second line of people, he felt like he had no choice but to go through them again.
Here's my question: at some point did you make an attempt to communicate with the police, to let them know you saw anything, to give them a story? At some point, did you attempt to communicate with them, and what happened when you did that? If you did that?
Yeah, I think Michael and I both have some stories about that. Like, I went up to the first officer I could find. I mean, there were tons of them there. I went up to the first one, very politely and calmly said, "Sir, I would like to give a witness statement. I saw both collisions." You know, I expect him to be like, "Oh, okay, like, let me write it down." And instead he was like, back up, you know, get out of the street. And, you know, I was
did you get his name
so
or
the did, next officer.
Did you get any and, way to identify, any identifiers?
Did you get a badge number?
Anything, name?
No, it was, in the moment I didn't even think of it.
Okay, sorry, so continue on. Yeah, continue on.
I mean, you had chased the car to make sure he didn't get away, right, after the first collision?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
that,
what,
but then first I stopped at the scene of the second collision to see, you know, like, who was injured and what was happening, and to make sure. There was somehow a fire engine got there almost immediately, and there were medics on the scene, and I told them that there had been one up around the corner and they had to get up there too. And then, you know, I stood around kind of stunned for 2 seconds, and then I went down to where the car had been stopped. So after I asked the first cop if I could give a statement and was totally rejected, I asked the second one, and his response was, "Well, why were you in the street?"
Right. So, but unfortunately, you didn't get any identification from any of the cops?
No.
Did you ever at any other point try, or do you know if anybody else that tried to give?
They did. In fact, I know that one Occupy DC person has six badge numbers of cops because that refused witness statements.
That's important. It's very, very important.
And you can see some of the cops on the videos.
It's important because, and I'll tell you why. Because that is the big mistake that the cops made that they will not be able to come up with an excuse for. I'll be willing to bet that what they would certainly try to say would be that didn't happen. If you don't have any evidence of it, we'll deny.
Oh no, there's something on video. Yeah. I have seen our next person, Michael Patterson, who's going to come on after the break, where he goes to the cops and say, "Are you kidding me? You're not gonna take our witness statements."
Was that audio at all?
Audio and video.
I'm telling you right now. That is very, very important data.
Yeah, and if you're assuming anything's going to happen to the police, I got an argument with you there. I know how the police
I'm
work.
I'm telling you.
But we got to take a break, so don't.
Yeah,
tell
we got
me.
More to say.
This is WPFW. This is the Raucous Caucus. I'm Terry D. Kester. I'm here with Garland Nixon and
Mark Levine.
We've also still got Heidi Sipple on the line. Are you still with us, Heidi?
No.
I'm here.
Okay.
Michael Patterson's coming up.
We just heard from Sam Jeweler. We're going to get more information about this incredible event. Believe me, the clash, as Malcolm X said, the clash is here. It is here in this country. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
This is an on-air notice concerning proposed amendments to the Pacifica bylaws. On December 1st, 2011, the Pacifica National Board will meet by telephone to consider proposed amendments to the Pacifica bylaws. The meeting will be streamed live and archived at www.kpftx.org. The full text of the proposed bylaws amendments can be found at www.pacifica.org. Along with background information on the proposals, as well as additional information about the bylaws amendment process. The Pacifica National Board is comprised of members from each of the Pacifica radio stations. Pacifica members are encouraged to contact their local station boards with any questions or concerns about the proposed amendments. The WPFW Local Station Board can be reached by email at wpfw.lsb@gmail.com.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus. And we are back with the Raucous Caucus. Here I am, Terry D. Kester, with my colleagues. I'll try to figure it out, Garland.
And okay. Garland Kane.
Yeah. And Mark Levine.
I'm just going to begin once again. I will not read the whole thing, but I'm Malcolm X. I believe there will ultimately be a clash between the oppressed and those doing the oppressing. The clash is here. Next, we want to hear from Michael Patterson, because, Michael, I understand you sort of saw what was going on afterwards, you know, not necessarily the incident, which Sam's given us a good description of, and, of course, Heidi has well. But what happened afterwards in terms of people trying to make statements and trying to do their responsibility as citizens, am I correct?
Yes, pretty much what happened was I was running around to each different blockade, and I ran up on the second incident, and I pretty much someone told me, like, that car that was stopped over there hit this person, so I ran over there. I will admit I was pretty emotional because, like, these are people I care about,
sure.
Stuff like that. So I ran over there, and there was a cop standing right next to the driver's side of the car. And I was like, "Officer, are you going to arrest that man?" And his response was, he pulled out a mace can and told me that he was not effing kidding and that I should effing get on the sidewalk.
When you offered to be of help and make a statement, and the driver is standing there, is that what you said as well?
The driver was still in his car, but the officer is standing right next to the driver.
That's actually on video. I've seen you with the officer in the mace can, and someone says, "This is on video, officer," and then he puts the mace can away.
Yeah. So our live stream team was operating, and the live stream guy goes up and he's pointing the live stream camera at the officer. The officer notices the camera. And then he put the mace can away.
And you weren't the only one trying to make a statement at this point, right?
No. There was there's at least, you know, 6 or 7, 8 people who were like, you know, officer, I saw what happened. This car hit those people. And then I even did a mic check. And to clarify, a mic check is basically a human mic. Somebody will call a mic check. And then people will repeat the statement from the person who originated the mic check.
Right.
So I said, I called the mic check. And I said, if you saw the incident, raise your hand. And about eight people raised their hand, and I went to an officer, and I said, hey, officer, I have eight individuals who saw the incident. I can get them to the street corner, away from the car, away from the fray. You know, do you want to talk to these people? And I wasn't even given any sort of acknowledgement that they were interested.
And Michael, I mean, you're a veteran. I mean, you're not just some vagrant. I'm not that anything wrong with people who are homeless or anything like that. But I mean, you served your country in Iraq, right?
Yes.
I mean,
how long have you been back?
I got out June 7th, so a little over 4 months now.
And what led you to be part of Occupy DC?
Well, pretty much that there's a system in place in this country that basically only benefits a few wealthy minorities and punishes the rest. I mean, it's an unsustainable system. Everything in this country is run like a business, and some things should not be run like businesses.
All right.
And it's just not unfair, and it's pretty sinister in nature.
Well, and let me just throw out a piece of advice there, and that is, and this is very important. Pursue this relentlessly. And I tell you why. Because one of the things that allows a police department to get away with doing things is when people don't think anything's going to happen, and so they throw their hands up and they give up early. It's like you got them on the ropes and then you throw your hands up and say nothing's going to happen. Be wary. If you have, from what I hear, the people who are involved in this have very powerful evidence and have the truth on their side. If you continue to pursue it, I believe you will surely come out ahead. You will surely win. There will be proven. The only thing that would allow DC police to get away with this, in fact, if they did something wrong, the only thing that would allow them to get away with it would be if people stop pursuing it.
What do you guys feel like? I mean, and after you respond, Mike, I'd like to hear Sam and Heidi's reaction.
There's one other thing I forgot. There's something I forgot. I need to throw it out, and they need to hear this, and this is important, and anybody who's involved needs to hear this. And I haven't heard anybody say this yet. Whoever the driver was, you need to look into his background. Generally, you can go to you can go online, you can check the courts, you can run a person to see if a person's, if they've been charged for anything, etc. Because if the police are saying, well, look, these people were all wrong and they ran out in front of this guy, etc., and you go look and you find out this guy's been charged with reckless driving, a dozen times and DWI and all these other things, it's going to make it hard for them to make the argument that this is just some innocent driver. It sounds to me that whatever's going on with this guy, if you start shaking the trees, you're going to find a history. I'm not saying that you will, but it sounds that like
but
there's a possibility.
Are you saying? But the Occupy group does have some attorneys working pro bono with them, do they not?
Yeah, we have legal people working with us, and we certainly don't want to do anything that would encourage vigilantism.
No.
Sam, I want to ask you about that because, you said that, we didn't prompt you. You made that very clear. And yet the chief of police of D.C., Chief Lanier, has actually said something very strong. She says that Occupy D.C. is no longer a peaceful protest. And I wanted to hear what your thoughts are on that comment.
Yeah, actually today some interesting events actually unfolded. Today we did a march with D.C. Jobs or Else. And we tried to go onto the street today, and I was almost run over by a horse today by the police, and I literally tried to go on the street, and the police busted out the batons and said, get on the sidewalk, or we're going to, basically, they had the intent of using them today. So, and, right now, we're completely surrounded by squad cars, completely around the square, and, I mean, they're really ratcheting up the fear.
The other thing... I'd just like to add one other thing is that in her statement about how we are no longer a peaceful movement, she cited six injuries Friday night as evidence for that. Four of those injuries were our people who were hit by cars. Two of them were old ladies falling down.
By the way,
zero evidence to show that protesters pushed them.
I just want to say, I actually looked very carefully at the video of both those women. On one of them, it's very, very clear that a man at the conference pushes the woman over. If you look at another video, it's all on my website.
Somebody is attending.
One of the Koch brothers attendees.
It was a Koch brother.
But this guy goes in. He seems very angry. This is the woman in the black and white. He seems very angry. He's trying to get through. He pushes her down. And then you see on a different video, the one that the right wing is showing, him saying some words I can't repeat on radio. But if you look at the other video, it's very clear that he pushed her down. And by the way, that's all on my website. It's all over the web, too. And the other incident, by the way, I looked very, very carefully at the elderly woman. She's in an orange dress or jumpsuit, whatever it is, pantsuit. Anyway, it's very clear because she's in orange, this bright color. You can see her in the bottom left of the screen. You see a police officer in white that says, let's go, let's go, let's go. And he pushes forward. He pushes some men in suits. And I can safely say, as someone who spent a weekend with Occupy DC, I didn't see any of them in suits. Maybe there are a few of them. But they looked to me like people with the Koch brothers thing. I don't think anyone did it intentionally, but I think the cop pushed the men who clearly pushed her down the stairs. So, again, I don't think it was – they intended to push the woman down the stairs. But the clear thing is it wasn't Occupy DC that did either one of those.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, if you guys are standing around there and I come over and I beat you for a while and kick you, and then I say, it's no longer peaceful. There's violence all over the place here. Yeah. Technically, I'm correct.
Well, that's what our chief of police has said. That's what she has said. You know, I think we're at risk, as I'm quoting her here, I think we're at risk for some very large, very violent protest here in the United States, and they can spark off instantly.
Sam, let me ask you this, and Michael and Heidi, well, Heidi's back in Ohio, but Sam and Michael, what can the good citizens of D.C. who are listening to our voices right now, what can we do, the 99%, to help you?
Well, I mean, if you can't come out here, and, you know, we don't expect everyone to come out here and sleep in a tent in the middle of the park, but, I mean, we always post when we're having actions. We always post when we're having marches. I mean, donations help, food. It's winter. We definitely need sleeping bags, coats, gloves, mittens, hats. I mean, just a hug sometimes helps, too, because, like, this stuff gets exhausting. And, like, just to have someone call up and say, hey, listen, we support what you're doing, and we are with you. That, honestly, that it recharges the batteries.
Well, yeah, and in reference to this incident specifically, the D.C. police have a complaint hotline, and anyone out there who thinks that what they've done in this situation is wrong should please just call them and, you know, just speak for a minute or two about how wrong it is.
That's a great idea, and also you can call your D.C. City Council
and let's hear from
Mayor's office and let them know.
Yes, the mayor has also said that these people were out of line. I mean, let's hear from Heidi. We haven't heard from Heidi for a moment. You know, Heidi, listening to the witnesses and the police reports and everything else that you've been listening to, I mean, what do you ask Americans to do, and what are you doing next in terms of, besides healing, first heal, but, you know, what are you doing next in terms of protest and the movement? What do we need to do?
Sure. I think the first thing that people need to do, and the most important thing, is they need to wake up. They need to look around and not just see what's going on with themselves, but see what's going on in their communities and with their families. And I don't care if your finances are in good order and you weren't hurt by the stock market and the Koch brothers and these things don't affect you. I want you to look at your kids. And I want you to think about what kind of world we are about to leave them. And then I want you to make some good decisions. I've heard a lot of people out there that have criticized me for having my son in the streets. And my criticism goes right back at them. Why are they not in their streets? Why aren't they out trying to make sure that what we're leaving for them is a good thing?
What are you going to do in Ohio? I'm just curious. Are you going to do something there?
Yeah, we actually have, I came to D.C. to kind of see the setup and how things are going there because we have in Dayton, Occupy Dayton. And now it's Dayton, Ohio, so it's really tiny and we have like 15 people and it's sporadic and, we don't, have good infrastructure set up yet and good organization, but, that's why we were there trying to see, you know, how this is working in other cities and, so we can put it there. Now, we're not going to have any help from the police. I can say that without a doubt. They're not going to be supportive. Probably our community is not, but I think that's what it's going to take is for us to reach out and let middle America know, the everyday middle class, that they don't have to live like that. They don't have to work like dogs. We don't have to be overtaxed. Things can be fair. And then once we have middle America, I think that's when we take the game.
Right. I want to know just quickly, Sam, I know you got to go, and I told you you'd only be here half an hour, and I've already kept you past that, but are you a peaceful protest? And I want you to answer that question head on.
You're asking, are we?
Is Occupy D.C. a peaceful protest? The chief of police says you're not. How do you respond?
I would say yes. We certainly are peaceful protesters. We are loud. We may be obstructive at times. But we were loud and proud, and we were peaceful.
Let me just give you a piece of advice. That was a Koch brothers meeting. You might want to be wary about soliciting hugs, because if Herman Cain's around, he'll probably be offering them to the female protesters. So, you know, if you see that guy, no hugs for Herman Cain.
Run.
You got a very sick man.
I also want to add something also. Yes, I mean, people here like to give us a hard time. It's like, oh, we're blocking traffic. Oh, you know, you banged on windows. Oh, you interrupted. You inconvenienced people. But on the grand scheme of things, the people that we are protesting are literally profiting off misery in this country and misery around the world. So us blocking traffic and being slightly disobedient does not compare to what these men and women are doing to us.
Well, all right. Well, I want to say, you know, first off, as far as I'm concerned, if you've been part of protest, and I think we all have, you know, I mean, you, Heidi Sippel, your wife, Brandy, and Landon, and Sam Jeweler, and Michael Patterson, I mean, you, as far as I'm concerned, are the most courageous Americans that we have. I mean, I know there is nothing more frightening to go against the establishment, you know, to protest in situations where you have really no protection for yourself and have to bear the consequences. And, you know, I have the greatest admiration for you. I wish you the best, and we're going to encourage our listeners constantly to be part of this and to be part of Occupy. Occupy D.C., Occupy Dayton, Occupy New York City.
Let me say this. It's really easy. I went in just over the weekend. I sat in a circle. You know, you don't have to, as Michael Patterson said, you don't have to sit in a tent overnight to spend an hour and just talk to people. You'll find it's an extremely diverse crowd, young and old, all races, all walks of life. You got people that are homeless, and you got people with good jobs who support the cause. And, you know, as I think, you know, we are the 99%. The vast majority of people listening to my voice right now support the movement. It doesn't hurt to come out and, as Michael Patterson, come, you know, spend a half hour and give him a hug. He's a good guy.
Yeah. We need. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. You guys all know how to get a hold of Mark and us, and you've got to stay in touch with us. If there's anything else we can do to help you, let us know. We will
just
do it.
Just keep getting the word out, and actually, you know, thank you for actually being actual media.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Right. Okay. Our pleasure. Let me take a minute here, and I'll tell you why, because I consider myself an expert in this area, to tell you the way it's supposed to be done. It'll only take about a minute. Number one in this incident, the first thing you want to do is you want to attend to the medical issues at hand. You want to attend to injuries, to you know, life and limb. Number one, law enforcement officers on the scene, they want to attend to life and limb. Number two, they want to round up and separate the witnesses. You want to round up your witnesses, you want to separate them from the crowd so they can be interviewed, and you want to maintain security and crowd control of the area. Those are the three principal things you have to do. Make sure the person is okay. Make sure you have gotten, you have acquired all your witnesses, rounded them up, separated them from the crowd, and maintain crowd control, keep people away. Well, they did one, but they skipped one. You know what I mean? They started off with, okay, let's make sure the person is okay. Now let's do the crowd control, including the witnesses.
I got to jump in here because, you know, okay. I don't mean to pick on you.
Don't pick on you. Well, gee, that's new. Terry, not picking on me?
You know, but I mean, when you say
things... He picks on you every show, God. I watch this.
When you say things like that, you're telling me you weren't in Chicago. I was. You know,
no, I'm saying how you're supposed to do it right. I wrote policies, Terry.
I know how it's supposed to be done. Policies. This is not about policies. It's about what you talked about in the very beginning on who cops are and what they are. And I don't mean to denigrate every single cop. I'm not saying that at all. But the general mentality. One, it's going to be establishment. Two, it's part of establishment. Three, policy disappears. I've been in Chicago. I've been in Philadelphia. I've seen the riots. I've seen the police riots. Mm-hmm. I've watched all these things. I've been in jail myself. I've been arrested. It may be the way it's supposed to work, but that ain't the way it works.
That's
not in
point.
This country,
right.
Not in America. It does not work.
That is my point. When
the police are ready to riot, the police will riot. So we've got to take action, and I mean this. We've got to take action on the media, on WPFW and Pacifica. We've got to take action right now to help protect these people to make sure this doesn't happen.
But that is my point, Terry. My point is this. That is precisely my point. And I'll tell you why, because there could be lawsuits. And I was a part. I was the commander of the training division. When people sue police departments, there are a lot of people that could win, but they don't sue.
Yeah, keep those badge numbers, folks.
When people sue police departments, the first thing they want to know, what are your policies, number one, and what is your training? They're going to say, show me the policies that say what you're supposed to do and show me how you train your officers, because what they're going to try to do, what you're going to do with, when you're suing a police department, is say this department violated its own training and they didn't do, you know, the policies they were supposed
to do.
Here's
but what you're speaking to the attorneys.
I'm speaking the legal action
But me as a citizen, I can't do that.
No,
of course not. This is, you're talking.
You
to
can
the
go
attorney.
To the ACLU and ask them.
No,
to do
that's
that.
What happens. That's how you address that. But you can to just stand up and yell. Nothing's going to happen. You have to actively.
You know what?
Continue
I got to tell you guys. I mean, you just sound naive to me. I'm sorry. When I was in Chicago the first time I got arrested, I called the ACLU.
We did it.
Not in Chicago in 1968.
You weren't. I called the ACLU. I called legal aid. You know what the response I got from the ACLU and legal aid was? Have you got any money? That's the response
that
I got in Chicago.
Buddy.
Yeah, well, just wait till things grow. Just wait till
I was with the ACLU, and we sued the bejillipers off the Maryland State Police, and you
I'm in between both of you. The ACLU does a lot of good work, but they can't do every case, and they're not big enough.
You know,
they don't have enough money. They don't have enough power. Let me raise one thing, though.
We've got one guy that wants to get online on the show. I think you know him, Mark. I think he's. We want to hear from him. Jeffrey Light.
Oh, I do want to hear from him. Yes, actually, we do want Jeff. Well, actually, I want to get Jeffrey Light on the line because he is an attorney. He's a D.C. attorney who actually handles these kinds of cases.
All right.
One thing that actually I want to ask Jeffrey Light as my expert.
Jeffrey Light, are you there?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for calling in. Let me ask you this question.
One of the things that the D.C. assistant chief said is that he had two non-involved witnesses. That's the words he used, non-involved witnesses. And they're the ones who claimed that Heidi Sippel and her pregnant wife and her 13-year-old son, you know, jumped on the car. My question is this. Can the police just interview, quote, non-involved witnesses, unquote? It kind of reminds me, if you got a husband and wife and the wife is mauled over by a car, that the husband can't testify because he's involved.
There's no such designation.
Is that the policy, that they just interview the non-involved witnesses?
Go ahead.
Actually, the current police chief, Chief Lanier, a few years ago issued an order called General Order 401.03, which is very specific, and it says that an investigating officer, when preparing a traffic crash report, which is what was prepared in this case, needs to, quote, record information on all witnesses to the crash, on the traffic crash report.
Ding, ding, ding.
Hello.
I actually saw on the police report, I've seen a copy of the police report, and it says non-involved witnesses, and there's only lines for two. So they filled out those lines, and I guess the form doesn't have a place for more, so they said no more. I mean, what's going on here?
Well, they have a form PD-252 where they can attach more witness names to it.
Okay.
So they're certainly not just because there are only two lines there, but with the first incident, they didn't take a single witness statement. And what was I can understand if they were very busy that they might not want to take all of the statements on the spot, and they have rules that allow them to do follow-up investigations, but. They weren't even taking contact information from people. So I went around and gathered the contact information from everybody that had seen what had happened.
What is your relationship, Jeffrey, with Occupy DC? I mean, obviously you're involved.
I'm a legal advisor to Occupy DC.
Good. Thank you.
I've also been advising the Sipples and Georgia as well.
Good.
So it appears, if I'm understanding this, Jeffrey, that as the point I was making, it appears as though the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department has, in fact, violated their own policies or failed to adhere to their own policies in this incident.
Yeah, I think that part is very clear, that they have failed to follow their own policies.
Well, I'm curious if you'd comment on Officer Lee, who delivered the $20 or so don't walk citation to Heidi Sippel in the hospital when she's had her clothes ripped off her and she's about to go do a CT scan, delivers the citation to her but won't take her witness statement. Is that against DC policy?
Well, it's the investigating officer is the one who's supposed to be taking the statements, but all DC officers are required to take reports from witnesses that come forward and victims that come forward, and they're also supposed to provide victims of traffic accident with a packet of information without them having to go to the police station, but a packet of information about victims' rights, such as how to get monetary relief from the Victims of Crime Act Fund, and how to give a statement and what their rights are.
And did Heidi or Brandy or Landon or Georgia receive these victims' rights packets? I gotta ask.
No, they didn't.
And yet they're required to by D.C. A general order or directive or police policy?
That's part of the general order.
Okay. And Jeffrey, more importantly to me at the moment, I mean, what is your advice or counsel? I'm not sure if this is part of what you're doing, but I mean, for those people in Occupy DC and Occupy Dayton and Occupy New York, you know, what should they be doing now to protect their rights and to be able to continue the process and the protest?
Well, I conduct Know Your Rights trainings about once a week with the occupiers to let them know how to be respectful to the police, whether they're doing a civil disobedience action or whether they are trying to follow all of the laws, and how to assert their rights while at the same time being respectful, to not be violent. The police are not there to be the enemy. They're doing their job as well. And what people can do to assert their rights, for example, their rights as victims or their rights as witnesses.
And let me congratulate you, Jeffrey, just because you were successful Monday, finally, in going through the stonewalling, and I was there, and the police officers, there were like 12 or 15 of them, all of them silent with their arms crossed as people said, are you going to follow your own policies? Are you going to follow your own policies? And you managed to get through and actually get the Sipple's statement to the right people. So I got to congratulate you for what you and what Occupy DC
and
did.
Thank you.
The other question I'm having, do you know if anyone did, and that's what I would call when I was, because the first thing I thought when I was in charge of investigations, one of the first things I would say would be, do a run-up on a driver. Tell me, do you know if anyone...
Yeah, does anybody know anything?
And when I mean a run-up, I mean, does this guy have like 10 DWIs in background? Now, I'm not saying that I want to know that kind of stuff, but I'm saying, you know, that would certainly be pertinent in an investigation.
I trust that the police will now be doing their job and conduct whatever investigations they think are necessary. And if there is a civil suit that arises out of this, obviously, that kind of thing could be relevant to a civil suit as well.
And you know, I want to go back a little bit, you know, when you said talking about the rights of those encountering the police, that are encountering the police, you know, because this is important, because we want people to join these movements. We want them to know what they do. What specifically, I mean, if they're part of this movement, I'm sure hopefully they would be part one of your training and exercises, but what should they do if they are confronted by police, as one of the witnesses says, with a mace can, et cetera, et cetera? What is your rights in these situations? What should you do?
Well, the best thing you can do is just to document everything. Obviously, while you're there protesting, you might not be equipped with a video camera or a pen and paper, and that's why the National Lawyers Guild, I'm part of the local board of the guild here, we train people called legal observers to be going around watching what the police are doing, writing down badge numbers, documenting what happens, and the legal observers are people that are specifically there to be neutral witnesses, so that they can provide information to the Office of Police Complaints, or if there are any civil or criminal proceedings, they can be witnesses for that. So they're not there, you know, wearing buttons or cheering for the protesters. They're just there to be observers, and to facilitate, sometimes serve as liaison with the police to facilitate communication.
And what do I do when the cop comes up to me with his baton?
You stay calm,
yeah,
and you
right.
get his badge number.
He's going to hit me with a baton.
And you say, I'm being nonviolent, don't hit me. How's that for advice?
That's pretty good advice, yeah. It's important to make sure that you're not putting the officer in a situation that feels threatening to them, because that situation won't end well. Keep your hands visible. If you are at a protest, try to be as respectful as possible, and just document everything. In D.C., the Metropolitan Police Department requires its officers to identify themselves verbally by name and badge number if they're asked. So you can always ask for an officer. And
it's also on their shirt. I mean, just take a look. You should see it right there. And just think, remember it. And you can even say to an officer, and I've done this before, you know, officer, I'm being nonviolent. I have your badge number. I want to work this out in a way that, you know, that both of us come out of this really well. You know, I'm happy to you know, do what you ask. But at the same time, you've got to respect my right to shout at the Koch brothers or whomever I want to do. In other words, don't gratuitously, in my view, and you have a right to do it, but I still don't gratuitously insult or shout obscenities at the police. It doesn't do the cause any good, in my humble opinion. Even though you have a right, First Amendment right to do it, I think that when you're confronted with a police officer, try to de-escalate the situation, and you're likely to not be maced and not be hit.
And we are, unfortunately, totally out of time at this moment. Jeffrey Light, thank you very much for calling in.
Ditto.
And joining
thank
this discussion.
You.
We're really glad for the work that you are doing, as well as calling
and Heidi Sippel and Michael Patterson,
yeah,
and
everyone,
yeah,
and all the occupiers.
All the occupiers. I mean, if nothing else, get down there.
Sam Jeweler.
Give them a hug, if nothing else, guys.
I like that.
Herman Cain, no hug. Think about
what they're doing. I mean, the Koch brothers are these massively wealthy people who
pollute the air, and yet they had
to deal with the rabble of the 99%. It's a wonderful thing they're doing.
Just understand that the Koch brothers and everybody else is trying to do one thing, and that's trying to return the society to a feudal system.
That's true.
Believe me, that's exactly what they're doing.